Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhani. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhani. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're approaching almost the end of the chapter, the dynasty of Peru, and today we'll be reading text 34. 35 and 36, and text 36 is the text with the purport, very small purport, but that's the verse for today. So I'm going to read text 34 and 35, and then we'll come to 36. So text 34. Tasya sanirpav by Darbya Patnyas Tishra Susamataha Jagnus Tiaga Bayat Putran Nanurupa Itirite. In the translation for text 34, King Parikshit, Maharaj Bharata had three pleasing wives who were daughters of the king of Vidarbha. When all three bore children who did not resemble the king, these wives thought that he would consider them unfaithful queens and reject them, and therefore they killed their own sons. Text 35. Tashaivam vitate vamse tad artam Yayataha sutam marutstomena maruto paradvajam upadaduhu. And the translation for text 35. The king, his attempt for progeny frustrated in this way, performed a sacrifice named Marutstoma to get a son. The demigods known as the Maruts, being fully satisfied with him, then presented him a son named Bharadvaja. And text 36, which is on the board. Antarvachyam pratir patnyam Please repeat. Maithunaya Birhaspatihi Pravrito Varito Garbam Saptva Viryam Upasrijat Antarvatnyam Patnyam Maithunyaya Brihaspatihi Pavrito Varitor Garbam Sattva Viryam Upasrijat Antarvatnayam Pratrir Patnyam Maithunaya Brihaspati Pravrito Varito Garbam Sattva Viryam Upasrijat Please chant. Tarvatnyam patri patnyam Maithunaya Brihaspati Pavrito Varito Garbam Saptva Viryam Upasrijat Antarvatnyam Bratrir Patnyam Madhunaya Brihaspati Pavrito Parito Garbam Saptva Viryam Upasrijat Antarvatyani Pratipatnyam Maithunaya Brihaspati Pravrito Varito Garbam Saptva Viryam Upasrijat Antarvatyam Pratipatnyam Maithunaya Brihaspatihi Pravrito Varito Garbam Saptva Viryam Upasrijat In the word for word translation Antarvatnyam Pregnant Pratirpatnyam With the brother's wife, Maithunaya, desiring sexual enjoyment, Brihaspatihi, the demigod named Brihaspati, Pravrita, so inclined, Varita, when forbidden to do so, Garbam, The sun within her abdomen, Saptva, by cursing, Viryam, semen, Upasrijat, discharged. So, in the purport for text 36, I should read the translation. When the demigod named Brihaspati was attracted by his brother's wife, Mamata, who at that time was pregnant, he desired to have sexual relations with her. The sun within her womb forbid this, but Brihaspati cursed him and forcibly discharged semen into the womb of Mamata. Purport. The sixth impulse is so strong in this material world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar, wanted to have a sexual relationship with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of the higher demigods, so what to speak of human society? The sex impulse is so strong that it can agitate even a learned personality like Brihaspati. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sanyavadi Paschacha Dvishtarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'm going to say before I begin that I was a little apprehensive about dealing with this verse, but let me see. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur comments that actually this verse begins the explanation regarding the question, who is Bharadvaja? Because in the previous text, there's mention that Bharadvaja was given to the king, King Bharat, because his attempted progeny had failed. So the beginning of that explanation to the question of who is Bharadvaja is given here. And it's quite a dramatic beginning. Brihaspati desired to have sex with Mamata, the wife of his brother, Uttathaya. And we heard earlier, there was just one mention in the previous verses of the personality that was Mamata's son. And that mention was in relation to Bharat worshipping the Lord by 55 horse sacrifices on the bank of the Ganges. And the statement in relation to that sacrifice, making the son of Mamata the priest, he bound up 78 horses for sacrifice on the bank of the Yamuna River and gave away wealth. So that was in a little bit further back. So here we're hearing that the son, so this is going quite a bit back, so not in the position of a priest, but the son within the womb of Mamata objected to Brihaspati executing his desire. In fact, Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, he states that the child within the womb was shouting, and he was forbidding Brihaspati to execute his desire. So, you know, highly conscious being. And this is given in Sarita Darshini, this observation by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. So, the reason the child was shouting from within the womb was that there was no room inside the womb for him, for or at least another child. So this suggests that actually the gestation was quite advanced. So which of course makes the particular act of Brihaspati a little bit more astounding or surprising. Now, looking from, you know, a different perspective, just considering this act of brihaspati. In a different situation, a man could be called upon to beget a son in the womb of, and this is the term used by Srila Prabhupada, a lesser man's wife for the sake of better progeny. So that would be the reason that such an act could be performed. And of course, not in the current age, but in terms of the context of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that would actually be the criterion that would have to be met. So, in fact, from Maharaj Ambarish, and this was much earlier, we've covered this section, he had three sons. They were Virupa, Ketuman, and Sambhu. And in tracing the lineage, we hear that from Virupa there was a son, Pradashva, and from him in turn there was a son, Ratitara. But it was Ratitara who was in that position that he didn't have any sons. And he followed this particular injunction that's given in the scriptures. He actually requested the sage Angira to beget several sons in the womb of his wife, that is the wife of Ratitara. So because of this request, Angira begot sons in the womb of Ratitara's wife. And all these three sons, or the sons that were born with Brahminical prowess. So that was in the same chapter, but in the the same canto, but the sixth chapter. Now, the woman in this case was allowed to be impregnated by someone other than her husband. But the sons that actually came from the woman were then still considered to be sons that belonged to the husband. And so the position of the woman in that particular circumstance where the scriptural injunction permits the impregnation by somebody other than her husband, and particularly it's actually somebody very qualified who's permitted to perform that act, in this case it was Angira Muni, the position of the woman is compared to that of being like an agricultural field. So the person who possesses an agricultural field, he can employ another person to produce food grains from that field. But the food grains that are produced from the field, those grains are still considered the property of the landowner. So it's in a similar kind of sense. The sons that came from that impregnation were considered to be the sons of the descendant of Maharaj Ambarish, Ratitara. So even though Angira Muni had performed the act of impregnation. Now, if one considers the position of the child within the womb, and here, this particular child was shouting within the womb of Mamata, then that child can be considered to be a part of her husband's body. And why this is so is the husband is considered to indirectly be present within the womb of his wife, always pregnant wife. That's the understanding. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto, in the 18th chapter, there's this statement. It's very interesting. And this is in relation to Diti. With flower garlands, I'm reading this particular verse, with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, ornaments, and other paraphernalia, following this vow, and I'll come to that in a minute, should worship woman with sons whose husbands are living. So this is the position of the woman who's been impregnated by her own husband. She should worship woman with sons whose husbands are living. The pre- pregnant wife should worship her husband and offer him praise. She should meditate upon him, thinking that he is situated within her womb. So this is because of that idea that the child within the womb is part of the husband's body. So therefore, prayers are offered to the husband, and there's worship of other pregnant women, so that's breaking that kind of enviousness that is a natural tendency in this material world. So the worship needs to be done of other pregnant women who whose husbands are alive naturally, so everything is balanced. And so the meditation is that the husband is situated within the womb through that child. So it's a very close connection always. So here, in this particular situation that we've just been reading in this verse, is that child that's already there, that shouting child in the womb, is actually the body of Uttaya, the husband of Mamata. Now the vow that Diti was following, and this was something she had something of that enviousness, so to speak, in the heart. So she was being advised by Kashyapa Muni, while she was in that condition of being pregnant, to undertake a particular vow that would assist her with breaking that enviousness. So it wasn't merely just the worship of other pregnant women that would break it, but in her case, she had actually wanted Lord Indra to be killed. So her husband, Kashyapa Muni, recommended to her to undertake a particular vow. And so that vow was that, you know, she should worship the cows, the brahmanas, the goddess of fortune, the supreme personality of Godhead. And there was a particular way that he was trying to mold her, and that was that she take to the path of Vaishnavism. And so he gave her all kinds of rules and regulations that she needed to follow, because he wanted to assist her in breaking that enviousness that's there. And so some very simple things, these were some of the recommendations he gave to her that that was part of the vow she was to follow, so that there would be that sort of more a greater purity of heart. So he asked her to undertake a vow that she wouldn't actually ever go out without having washed her hands, feet, and mouth, not to go out in the evening, or to have her hair loose, and to not go out unless properly decorated with ornaments. And in addition, she wasn't to leave home unless she was sufficiently covered and sufficiently grave. So these were... I mean, it's adding to the kind of gravity of the situation of, you know, bearing a child but carrying animosity. So these were some of the recommendations that in Diti's case were recommendations given to assist her in breaking some of this animosity she was carrying while being pregnant, because her desire was to kill Lord Indra. in addition, she wasn't supposed to lie down unless she had washed both of her feet, or even to lie down with wet feet, or with her head pointing west or north, nor to lie down naked or with other women, or even to be lying down during sunrise or sunset. So, you know, there are all kinds of scriptural injunctions. And just following these rules and regulations, Kashyapa Muni thought was... trying to break that animosity within the heart of Diti. So I'm bringing this up because it's connected to, you know, we've got a very precarious situation going on here, because Mamata is in this, you know, difficult situation. And so I'm painting a picture, looking at things from a different angle. So these injunctions were given to Diti in order to purify the core of her heart, because these practices of Vaishnavism in following the rules and regulations cleanse the heart. And in terms of this cleansing of the heart, because it's a given that there's some sort of enviousness in the heart, so one could generalize and say that any particular woman carrying a child, there would still be that enviousness because it's part of the condition of being in this particular world that we're residing in. So the words that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses is that there are those contaminations that are covering the mirror of consciousness. And these contaminations can be swept away particularly by chanting the holy name. Because the holy name itself, it embodies profound spiritual bliss. So one could say, you know, the animosity, that the enviousness that's been carried in the heart of somebody who's carrying a child, that's the means for cleansing or, you know, sweeping away those contaminations. So, of course, we know this from Lord Chaitanya Chaita Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, because he's praying, let there be victory for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. So it's an extremely powerful method. And there's also Srila Rupa Goswami, who echoes this when he's writing in Namastika 7. He says, O holy name, O Lord Krishna, you dissipate the sufferings of your surrendered devotees caused by their offenses to the holy name. You possess the transcendental form of ecstatic beauty and bliss, and you appear as the embodiment of sublime joy for the residents of Gokula. You are therefore a fully spiritual entity of the same spiritual nature as the Vaikuntha planets. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So just pointing to this, the cleansing of those contaminations, the enviousness, the perhaps even malice that's being carried in the heart from, you know, and I'm particularly focusing on a person who's pregnant with a child, although it can apply to anybody in terms of the power of the holy name, is that it actually brings sublime joy. And profound spiritual bliss. So this is the better state to be in, clearly, if one is carrying a child. So so some of the suffering is going to start emerging as we read further for everybody involved in this act of Brihaspati, because he curses, first of all, the sun within the womb, so his brother's son. Actually, he says, become blind. That is his curse. And so I guess, you know, don't see what's going on, become blind. And this suffering that's coming up, we get some picture of it. Arjuna paints it in Bhagavad Gita, because he puts it this way, and I'm going to read the Sanskrit. Adharmi bhavat Krishna pradasyanti kula sriyaha Shrishu dushta shuvashpeya jayate varna sankara. So this translates into, when irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. So this is the suffering that's going to be coming up, and it's painted by Arjuna, and that's from 114 Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Baladev Vidyabhusan, he explains that one is made to trespass dharma by one's brothers. So the trespassing of dharma happens because sometimes of the actions of others. And this brings about sin in the form of destruction of the family. So it's a very precise way that Arjuna has pinpointed the suffering that's coming up, and particularly in relation to this act of this forceful impregnation. So a further consequence that Arjuna paints is that women, to generalize, if they're afflicted with ignorance, let's say there isn't the chanting of the holy name, think that they may engage in sin, be made to defy vows of chastity by men. They then become corrupted. So just because of the action performed, so it may be even a close brother-in-law, as was the case here, then it actually brings about some sort of ignorance that happens in a woman, that she starts to think that she can engage in that kind of sinful activity, and so vows of chastity are thrown out of the window. So this is the two consequences that Arjuna paints of the difficulty that arises, the consequence of this kind of action that we've just heard described here. And the consequence is, and this is very interesting, is that, and this is Arjuna's, or Srila Baladev Vijayabhusan, he puts it this way based on Arjuna's painting the consequence. He says that mixed varnas arise. So the child in this particular case that results from the forceful impregnation of Brahaspati, we're going to hear later on, is going to have to move. So it isn't just a case of mixed varna. He's actually going to have to move from the heavenly realm to the earthly realm. So, you know, quite a problematic, you could say, in one sense, situation. And Arjuna's description of the two consequences that arise, because now there's some sort of mixed caste that happens in the family, there's hell for those members who destroyed the family. That's the first thing. So, because that person's responsible not only for destroying the family, but also the traditions of the family. And a second consequence that Arjuna is painted is that the ancestors of the family fall to hell because they're now going to be deprived of offerings that are being made to them, the pinda offerings, from sons who are qualified givers of the pinda or the offerings. Of course, we have to look at the second consequence that's painted by Arjuna, because it doesn't apply for those engaged in devotional life. I think this came up in a previous class, a question that was asked. One isn't required to perform these kind of actions, because simply by performing devotional activity, one can deliver hundreds of forefathers. So that second consequence is not applicable if one is engaged in devotional life, and should one actually be the victim of this kind of action that was performed in this verse. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he quotes something very interesting. This comes from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 5th chapter. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, the sages, or to general living entities. So it's very interesting, because Arjuna's second consequence truly is not part of the reality of anybody who's practicing devotional life. one is free of that obligation of having to be concerned about making special offerings, even if the offerings are made to Lord Vishnu for one's forefathers, just by virtue of the fact that one's duties and obligations, even to demigods or sages, fall away just by virtue of the fact that one is performing devotional activity. Because after all, the object of one's devotional activity is the one who gives liberation to all living entities. So by one's worship of, in this case, Prabhupada used the name Mukunda, as the one giving liberation, then the duties that go along with trying to assist forefathers fall away. Now, to put it another way, there's Srila Prabhupada's generalization that good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. And so the reality is that that good population is dependent on the chastity and faithfulness of society's woman. So, and Srila Prabhupada puts it that women will be misled into adultery, or won't be misled into adultery if they are engaged in various religious activities. Because the religious activities provide engagement for the senses, and so this preserves the chastity and devotion. So this is viewed as, I guess, the method for having women remain in the correct position to allow for the good population to be there in society, and so that there's peace and prosperity. So by being in that condition, they can give birth to a good population that can participate in the Vanashram system, because then you're not having that problem of mixed caste that has resulted from some adultery. And so those individuals then can be integrated into the Vanashram system with ease, because everything has been done according to correct religious principles. And now, how an individual takes birth and how that individual becomes eligible for the Vanashram system is described by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. This is also from the 11th canto in the 17th chapter. And I'm going to read what Krishna says to Uddhava. The various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior energy manifest in the situation of the individual's birth. And I'm going to quote the verse. Vanashram ashranam cha janma bhumi anusharinihi ashan prakritayo nirnam nichar nikotamo tamaha. So the particular condition of the individual's birth is extremely important. It's what's going to dictate the way that they're going to fit into the Vanashram system, what their occupation will be, which social division they fall in. So it's critical, the condition at the time of birth, like completely critical. So each living entity is born with a certain amount of intelligence, a certain amount of beauty, a certain amount of social opportunity. And because of that, according to the quantity of those factors that are present, the person, the particular individual that is born has a particular occupational and societal position within the Vanashram system. So even though the Vanashram system is an external designation, because one's looking externally, it's necessary until one comes to be in a liberated stage, if one's taken to the process of or the dharma that's prescribed for this particular age. Still, that Van Ashram system is the, I guess, the it's a kind of receptacle that puts each individual in the correct position within the broader societal body. So, again, everything's dependent on the condition at birth. So, the child that's born of a forceful impregnation, such as in this case that we were just reading, it's very interesting because Brihaspati is somebody who, Krishna puts it this way, is highly situated in Vedic culture. So, and in fact, he represents somebody who's highly situated in Vedic culture. This is what Krishna says. It's actually right there in the 11th canto in the 16th chapter. This is how Krishna refers to Brihaspati, that he's actually Brihaspati in terms of Brihaspati's representation of somebody being highly situated in Vedic culture. But here we're reading an act of Brihaspati that even though it would be permissible in the time period that's being dealt with in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the brother could impregnate his the wife of his, I mean, he could impregnate the wife of his brother. In this particular case, it wasn't within the codes of religiosity because it was a forceful impregnation. So this is, I got stuck here. I thought, this is a little bit difficult to comprehend, but Srila Prabhupada puts it that it's the sex impulse that motivated that particular action. But then everything else plays into the picture. You've got an individual and you've got the persons involved and the suffering that's coming up. So, I mean, Krishna puts Brihaspati along with, this is how he put it, among priests, I'm Vashishtha Muni. Among those highly situated in Vedic culture, I'm Brihaspati. I'm Kartikeya amongst great military leaders, and amongst those advancing in superior ways of life, I'm the great personality, Brahma. So, there's the quandary, and I'm stopping at this moment because that is, I don't know how to deal with that particular part perfectly. So I've just tried to paint the picture of what's coming up. So if there's some contribution in terms of the particular quandary that's there of how it is that a personality that represents Krishna in terms of being an embodiment, I suppose, of being very highly situated in Vedic culture, as engaged in such an act.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you so much for the nice class. For this, from this text, we got some knowledge. Even there's some knowledge from before, we can see in Bhagavatam, there's so many, you know, example like this, like Lord Shiva was attracted by the Mohini Rupa, and then Lord Brahma, even he was the father of Brihaspati, and he was also attracted by his own son and daughter, so we can see. And then in Indra with the Gautam Muni's wife. So there's so many examples, that's those who are jnanis and yogis, and they are fallen on the, you know, material enjoyment. And then we can see in Bhagavad Gita, Lord says, Daivi Hosha Gunamayi Mama Maya Durataya. Those who are, you know, not following the rules and regulations of the Lord, and Maya is very strong. If we were not following the rules and regulation of the Lord, He gave us so many things, you know. He, for the liberation of the jiva, He gave the Vedas, all the knowledge. But the Vedas, who is the teacher of the demigods, Brihaspati, he did such a ridiculous act. But, you know, later we can see there is some, you know, good thing. Actually, they are not doing all these things, we know, but as a Prabhupada sometime writing in the purport in Gita, Arjuna was he's a devotee of the Lord. He knew everything. But for the living entity, those who are, you know, non-devotee, for those people who are not following, even they have so many questions. So Arjuna was asking for them, like that, Brihaspati is a guru of demigods. Okay? So it can be happen in the future. So he was just showing the path. He was doing this thing means he is not bad. He was okay, but just for us, for giving the knowledge to us, he is doing such this act. So even Lord Shiva is chanting so, you know, nice. I think 40 verses is there in Bhagavatam. I think 425, 32 to 70. So he was chanting so nice, you know, it was, you know, Vishuddha Bhakti. Not only Shuddha, it's a Vishuddha. So, even after that, he commit that, you know, that mistake with the Mohini Rupa. He was following to Mohini. So we can see, without Bhakti, everything is useless. Right? Whatever we are doing, except bhakti, everything is useless. So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, bhakti mukti, what was that? Krishna bhakta, niskam ataya vasan, bhakti mukti, siddhi kami sakale asan. So, we can say he's a great, learned person, Brihaspati. He's a teacher of, he knew all the Vedas. Even after that, he did that mistake. So Lord says the system, how to, Daivi Osha Gunamai, how to just cross over this material ocean. So still they are in, heavenly planet. And even Lord Brahma, even Lord, Shiva in heaven, all are including in the material world. So until and unless we learn to follow the rules and regulations and bhakti of Krishna, we will do such things, this ridiculous work, act. So, I just got a knowledge from this. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your contribution, particularly emphasizing that necessity to take to the process of bhakti. And I guess I had that understanding from the point of view just that the contaminations that are deep within the heart can only really be cleared by indeed the rules and regulations, which was something of how Kashyapa Muni tried to deal with Diti, but in the end those contaminations, I guess I was highlighting what would be present in somebody who may be carrying perhaps even malice or unhappiness and the natural enviousness that's there from just being in the material world, that it can only be cleansed by the chanting of the holy name. When I was looking at this verse, it came to mind many years ago. I read an article and it was illustrated with photographs. It was an article that in Liberia, in Africa, because of the war that had gone on there, many women had got raped and they'd had children as a result of those activities at wartime. And so there were photographs of the children growing up with their mothers, and then the mothers, were interviewed to say something of their experience, bringing up a child that had come from that kind of just like in this case, there's a forceful impregnation, but they'd looked after the children, they'd cared for the children in each of those cases, and their broader family had given them support. And in all cases, you see the children looking happy, like in all the photographs, it was clear. So I thought it was very commendable that, and I think it's part of that culture that, you know, there's embrace of the child. So in the, here we're going to read that actually this child is abandoned and pushed out. But there can be a lot of difficulty in the heart from this kind of action. So indeed, whether it's the pre-preparation for the birth of the child, or whether it's the pre-existing enviousness in the heart, certainly the holy name and the joyfulness of the holy name can drive all that away. It sweeps it away. So thank you that you were particularly emphasizing the fact that these are yogis and gyanis, and they don't have that good fortune of this extraordinary method to clear away and protect one from those contaminations. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. Bhagavatam is super weird. That's all I can say, because this, I thought it was funny that the child forbid Brihaspati from having sex with his mother while he was in the womb. And I think he, this is my assumption, obviously it's speculation, but I think he forbid Brihaspati not for his mother's sake, but for his own sake. Brihaspati had sex with the mother while the baby was still in the womb, so. That's pretty disgusting for the child. So, but my question is related to the first part of the verse, 34. It said that the three wives of Maharaj Bharata, they had three sons by him, but the children didn't look like him. And so they assumed, Bharata might think, oh, these are not my child. Who have you been sneaking out with? So I know a real case like that. My mother has some friends, two African-American couple, and the wife got pregnant and she had a child, and the child turned out really light-skinned, almost basically like a white child, but the child looked like the father. But still, the father became so upset, he didn't even do it. I don't know if there was DNA tests back then, but he became so upset he divorced his wife and left her because he thought she cheated. And so my question is kind of related to that of jumping to conclusions. There's so many pastimes where people jump to conclusion. There's so many, but I'll just give one. That pastime where Sukanya, she committed offense against a great sage named Shravana Muni. And because she committed this offense against this sage, he was very old and, you know, decrepit. So, but she had to marry him because she committed offense against him. And long story short, this sage wanted to make himself look young, so he jumped in a magical lake and became super young and good looking. So when her father approached Sukanya after some time, after the father married her off to Shravana Muni, he saw her with a young man and he started blasting her. And then she explained the situation and he became forgiving. She became forgiven and he made a mistake. So my question is kind of related to that. A lot of times we see that people in the material world, they install so many things like audio bus or surveillance cameras, this and that. And you may catch somebody doing something wrong, and then you may spread rumors or commit offenses. So we see that even if you see things, that doesn't make you a seer. You may see something externally, but that doesn't mean you're a seer. The one place we can't put an audio camera, an audio bug or a surveillance camera is within our heart, so we can never know how the true circumstances of what person, places, things, and circumstances are. So what is a person to do? My direction is going towards a quote. It says, nothing will give you greater peace than minding your own business. So we're in a particular position, we think everything is our business, especially a position of leadership, but in the end, we can all make mistakes. It doesn't matter whether we're leadership or non-leadership. We see something, then we tell everyone, and then we potentially commit apparatus and lose our own bhakti. So what is a person to do in that dilemma when they feel that, oh, it's my duty to expose the affair that's going on between Sukanya and this good-looking guy? So many things, and it's Kali Yuga, you know. We see how small things can escalate from mistakes like this. So what is a person to do in this dilemma? So, Hare Krishna.
So the question being asked is, one observes something externally that appears a particular way, and one can even make an assumption. But the point you were raising was that actually it's very difficult to know the condition of heart of someone. And so your question was, you know, if some apparent transgression is, you know, exposed publicly, you know, it may not really be a reflection. I'm taking the implication is of where the person's heart is. And so you were asking, how does one deal with some sort of public exposure of somebody's transgression on some cultural level? Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting question. A devotee that's chanting and, you know, following the rules and regulations, the scriptural rules and regulations, and, you know, is further along in the devotional path, can often see, if it's Krishna's desire, what the condition is of somebody's heart. And the actions that a person is performing is also indicative of the condition of their heart. So the fact that one may not, what you were pointing to was, you know, somebody's looking externally and sees something but may not know the inner workings of things. And I guess my response is that a devotee whose heart has been cleansed to a large extent can actually understand the condition of heart of somebody who they're observing. And in that particular circumstance, say a devotee is in fact seeing the condition of heart of somebody who is performing perhaps, you know, a major transgression, a cultural, societal transgression. It could be anything. It could be something adulterous. It could be perhaps even mistreatment of a child, because that's going to come up connected to this verse. then it actually requires good judgment on the part of the devotee who's understanding the condition of heart of someone. So the judgment that is required is something that is for the benefit of the person who's performing an improper action. Because that's always the motivation of a devotee. The motivation of a devotee is to assist somebody in their spiritual life. So the devotee looks at what's the correct approach or method to deal with that person. So if one is just looking externally, one may function on the level of gossip. Or one may, you know, judge somebody without proper understanding. But a devotee who has like a deeper understanding of the condition of the heart of somebody, that person then has responsibility Because if you see, you have responsibility. So when there's responsibility, one has to make a judgment of how one's going to deal with the situation. So sometimes it's greater kindness to treat a person in a very cut and dried manner, because that person requires that kind of treatment because of the misdeed they're performing. Or in another case, it may require a conversation with somebody, because that condition of heart is such that a person has an ability to hear. So making that judgment is the onus of the devotee whose heart is somewhat cleansed, who is actually understanding the mentality of the person who's performing a wrongdoing. And often the course of action taken may be surprising to those that are looking on the sideline, because they may not be understanding the mentality of the person performing the wrongdoing so well. And if somebody on the sideline is disturbed by the judgment employed by a devotee who can see better, they're free to bring the matter up, and then again it's a judgment of the devotee how much will be divulged. You know, it's always, one has to be very cautious when there's not only a moral issue, but you know, it's an issue that affects the spiritual well-being of others. It affects the peacefulness of a whole society often. So it really, there's a lot of responsibility on the part of the devotee who can actually understand and see the mentality of a wrongdoer. Yeah, so that's my response.
Okay, I want to reconfirm that Balabhadra Prabhu, you said that Srimad Bhagavatam...
Talk this way a little louder, Karina, yeah. Again into the microphone so everybody can hear.
So thing is that I want to reconfirm his statement that he told Srimad Bhagavatam has a lot of weird facts. Is it that? He said?
It was
weird. So please take it back, I request. Because this is an offense. Why? Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. In that verse you can see how it is full of the scientific things, and everything is there in Srimad Bhagavatam. Why I want to refute your statement? Because in this episode, like a Brihaspati did something wrong, that it seems to be wrong for our vision. You go back to scriptural injunction. That in scriptural injunction, it is mentioned that we studied, I think, 2-3 days back, 5 things is forbidden in this age, like taking sannyas. In that verse, it is mentioned that time it was possible that one can impregnate one's brother's wife. It was there in that rule, but now it is forbidden. And another thing, in Bible also, it is mentioned, I have read also in Bible, it is written, if a young woman, brother's wife, if she is young and she doesn't have any issue, then Bible recommends that then his brother can accept her and brother can impregnate. This is the statement. And here also we can see this was done before, long before, but not this age of, not this Kali age or whatever you say. And another fact I was thinking that you said very nice point, that when you gave an example, illustration about how in Africa, what happened. So regarding to that point, in Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that These are Varna Sankar. These Varna Sankar, what do they, they spoil whole the world. You know, the whole world is become chaotic condition because of these people. These are demons. You can say they are not good people. And they create turmoil of whole world. Whole world end because of this disturbance caused by this Varna Sankar. In that way, Prabhupada has explained also. Although it is illegitimate, what is called not legitimate. Here also we can see that how the Mamata, she felt very bad for this illegitimate son. Then she abandoned her, this boy. But this is a very nice fact. We have to learn how the women should be in chastity. That Bhagavatam is teaching us from this story that how women should be chastity. Of course, they did something wrong, but still she is repenting and she abandoned their son. Even Bharadvaja could not maintain, Brihaspati could not maintain their son. Finally, demigods, they take care of their son and they gave to, Bharat Maharaj. So this is something we have to learn from here.
All right. So, Karina Niti Prabhu, you had a little concern with the statement made earlier about, the odd aspects of Bhagavatam. So, you were just highlighting that it's a means to actually learn. And indeed, often to learn a particular moral, there'll be a story to learn a moral. So the Bhagavatam is quite extraordinary because it goes beyond just plain morality. It actually takes one to the transcendental plane where one can actually overcome the the most dirtiest thing in the heart, which is some sort of enviousness towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these pastimes are extraordinary, because one has to look at so many angles. So this very pastime, you had stated what you'd understood from this pastime, and I just want to say that it's more complicated than merely the injunction that was given earlier on, that at this particular time a man can impregnate his brother's wife. That is what is the extraordinary nature that you were pointing to. In this very pastime, one's having to look at much more complex factors than merely an being allowed to impregnate a brother's wife, because these circumstances were complicated. It was a forceful impregnation. The woman, the brother's wife, was already carrying a child, probably very advanced in the gestation period, so it's much more complicated. So, and that's the beauty of the Bhagavatam, that truly one has to look at so many angles, and it requires so much judgment, to good judgment and purification of heart to understand, how it is that things will play themselves out and which position different personalities take in relation to an issue. So it is more complicated than merely that injunction that you brought up. And yes, so that was something that just came to my mind from your comment. Thank you. Zibal?
And just to add what you said, we have the guidance of such devotees, our acharyas. In the case of, our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, he gave us the understanding or the learning, the thing that we have to learn from this passage, which was that even in the position of demigods, even in the position of a highly elevated personality such as Brihaspati, sex can completely, the sex impulse can completely do some big number in those personalities, what to speak, and people like ourselves. So, you know, be aware of this uncontrollable impulse that is like that. That's what Prabhupada brought in the purport. And, you know, we hear more about it, but it's, that's the moral, the understanding that is there.
Yeah, and Srila Baladev Vidyapati's son and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur both point to the extreme selfishness that's there with the sex impulse too. I mean, from the point of view of cursing the child that's already within the womb to become blind just to execute that sexual act. And also the later on we'll come to what the response is of the of Brihaspati who performed that act, and also of Mamata who had to bear that child once the child was born. It, you know, leads to, you know, having to look at things even more deeply. So indeed the guidance of the acharyas is very useful, and at least in this particular verse today we come to get that guidance, as you were pointing out, that actually it was extremely distressing for the child that was already in the womb. And Mamata herself was, you know, going to be questioned as to her particular position in terms of chastity and religiosity. And Brihaspati had opened up the way to what would normally be a pretty hellish situation for the entire family. So that's going to be guided further, indeed, as you said, by the acharyas. So their judgment is perfect because their hearts are not contaminated. So we're very grateful that we have that as the support thing, which I guess balances the word, so to speak, aspect of these very unusual pastimes, because we're getting the uncontaminated hearts that are then speaking for how to look at the situation. So we're very grateful. So thank you very much for your kind feedback. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.